our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm sorry for doubting you, Darius.
Always be sorry if you doubt Darius.
You'll learn over time, guys.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits. Justin, don't watch David Price starts on Invocation, please. You can do better than that.
I gotta figure out some way to ignore my family while I'm stuck in the wilderness with them.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
That are unmotivated, that coast by on just natural God-given ability.
Hanley Ramirez.
Oh my God, we both said it at the same time.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 134 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode is the usual crew. Darius Austin is back. Darius, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastically. Could have used with a little bit more sleep, but what else is new? How was your vacation?
Yeah, really nice. Went down to Devon, which is sort of in southwest England here. Went to, you know, lots of nice coastline and walking around there. And yeah, it was all a really good time. Saw the family, so good fun.
Couldn't that really describe the majority of England, a nice coastline?
There are bits that are quite dull coastline. The southwest is considered particularly nice. But yeah, I suppose relative to the US, we have quite a lot of coastline.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you back. I'm going on vacation next week, so if you prefer the episodes that I'm not on, definitely tune in next week, because I will be out into the wilderness with no cell phone reception. Someone who's really excited about that is Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how are you?
No, I'm not excited about that, because that means I have to host, and that's just more responsibility, which I don't like.
Yeah, you have to host. You have to do all the behind-the-scenes stuff, though I'm making you do all the behind-the-scenes stuff today, too. So
I didn't sign up for that.
How are you doing, though?
Yeah, whatever. It's 90 degrees, and you know, since we're recording, I can't have the AC on or a fan on because that would be too much noise. So let's get this thing moving.
All right. Well, let's bring in Chuck, where he says it's raining like Vietnam. Chuck, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine. I hate to start off the show with a ramble, but I'd like to mention that and congratulate you, Justin, on your Hardball Times piece. I shared it with multiple people on Facebook that coach girls softball teams and various girls and women's sports, and they were excited about it. So I want to congratulate you on that. And then I also want to give you a jab and say that I was shocked that when I came out with my first four rounds of midseason redraft, I was expecting to hear from you because I put DeGrom in front of Cueto. So,
yeah,
go.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but and I also didn't necessarily read it yet.
Well, that'll happen. You're a busy man.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been extremely busy, but I definitely will get around to reading it, especially on my vacation. And you will definitely be getting an earful for, I'm sure, various reasons, just like you did when we did our preseason ranks before the beginning of the year.
You've been nice enough not to shove it in my face too bad that I didn't believe in your Giants as they have the best record in baseball at the break.
No one ever believes in the Giants, and then they win World Series in an even year. Darius knows this.
Yeah, it's just a fact of life, really, isn't it?
Right? You know, until history doesn't repeat itself, we're going to just believe that it's going to happen. So, but let's go ahead. We'll jump into our list of players. But before we do, I want to remind everybody that we are sponsored by OfficialFantasyRings.com. Use our promo code FWFB at checkout for 10% off your customizable ring for your league. Don't worry about getting a trophy or a belt. You can't show those off wherever you go. A ring can travel with you. You can make people kiss your ring and rub it in your league mates' faces all year long that you were the league champion. Go to OfficialFantasyRings.com, use FWFB at checkout, and get 10% off your purchase. All right, let's go ahead and we're just going to jump right into our list of players. As usual, Chuck sent me a couple names, so I threw those kind of towards the top. Rougned Odor was one of those guys. Chuck, do you think this is an elite second baseman?
I really do. I mean, you look at his age and his progression. He's got a really interesting stat line so far this year. I mean, 16 home runs and 7 stolen bases. Plus, he clocked Jose Bautista, which I really enjoyed. But, you know, the one thing I really noted when I looked through his stats is that his strikeouts have really jumped since June. But since June 1st, his batting average has gone way up. So maybe he's one of those guys that really needs to be aggressive at the plate. I'm a believer in Odor. I mean, he's so young. If he takes even a half step forward from here, I think you're looking at a top 2 or 3 second baseman, which, you know, I don't think anybody sort of views him as. I don't know if it's because he's hidden in Texas or what.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, bringing up his player page right now on FanGraphs, I was actually a little surprised that his numbers are as good as they are. I feel like it's been fairly under the radar, giving just a kind of a cursory look. You know, I mean, he is striking out the most of his career. He is walking the least amount of his career. He's barely walking, 2.3%, according to FanGraphs. So those are two kind of concerning things for me, but you can't really argue with the output. And he was a guy that I was extremely high on coming into the season. I liked what I saw in terms of the peripheral numbers and especially kind of the StatCast numbers. He's kind of a StatCast darling in that regard. Darius, what are your thoughts on Odor rest of the way?
Well, that walk rate is what really worries me. Like you guys, I really liked him coming into the year, and I have a lot of hopes for the future. He's still just 22, I think, but 2.3% is the worst in the league. That's worse than guys like Alcides Escobar, Johnny Giovatella. These are people who do not walk. I think Odor has walked 8 times in the past 3.5 months, which is quite concerning to me. And just that alone makes it difficult for me to see him right now as somebody who's going to be in the upper reaches of a draft. The power and the steals are great. And, if he can maybe start walking a bit more and show that aspect to his game, then I'll have a little more confidence. But right now, I'm a bit worried about that aspect of his game. And I know Jeff Sullivan at Fangraphs pointed out recently that pitchers have stopped throwing him so many fastballs as well. So I wonder if he's going to get even more exploited and strike out more because he just chases everything outside of the zone. So I have a few concerns there. But certainly at the age he is, he can work it out over the next few years.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Odor going forward?
Well, in his defense, his walk rate's about triple what Tim Anderson's is. But normally, I hate guys that have terrible plate discipline, but there are a few guys that can get away with it. This is one of those guys. He's got elite power for a second baseman. He's going to have double-digit steals, which is a nice little bonus. And he's in a great park and a good lineup, so the runs and RBIs are going to be there. And I think you're not going to get much better than the 275 average, because when you're striking out at whatever, like 22% or whatever it is. And his BABIP's over 300, so even that, his average is only at 275. So I don't see that climbing. But you don't need him to hit 300 to be a top 5 second baseman. I don't see how he's not a top 5 second baseman easily. And I'm curious where you guys would rank him in Dynasty, because he's already a top 5 second baseman, and he's only 22. I can't think of many guys I'd rather have over him other than Altuve.
Yeah, I don't think there is anybody in turn. I mean, the only one that really jumps out to me in a dynasty format.
Moncada?
No, because I listened to Mike and Matt talk about Moncada and where they would draft him in a dynasty draft. I don't change my redraft rankings for a startup dynasty league. You know, I'm playing to win now. So, like, fuck the future. Fuck Moncada. I want to win now. For me, like their entire conversation, which was a great episode and a great conversation, was fucking insane. Like, you know, the people there willing to take Moncada over a guy, they have no idea when he's going to be up. I would venture to say that Matt Carpenter is a guy I would take over.
No. Isn't he like 30?
So who cares? If you're playing to win now, which you should be, in every format.
So Justin, does that mean that you wouldn't take Addison Russell over him?
No, I think that's somewhat close, but I think I would take Odor.
I think Odor is doing it now, and everyone is projecting Russell to be doing it at some point soon, but it hasn't happened.
Actually,
yet.
I don't know. Now looking at Carpenter, I don't know if I would take Carpenter.
Yeah, Odor's pretty similar numbers to Carpenter. It's like, yeah, you want to win now, but...
Plus, you get to add the stolen bases.
Yeah, it's like, is Carpenter so much better than him that you're willing to take the 8 years age difference? I'm going Odor there.
Yeah, I mean, kind of going through the second baseman, you know, I mean, it depends on how sustainable you believe Cano's season is and how long you can keep it up. But even that, you get the stolen bases from Odor.
Better part.
I like the Rangers lineup better.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I mean, Cano is a decent amount ahead of Odor in both power and average right now. It's not that he's just, like, close. I think there's a decent gap there.
For what it's worth, I have Cano at 30, and I have Odor at 36. So I'm on board with Cano still being in front of Odor.
But not what about in dynasty format?
In a dynasty format, it kind of depends on it would depend on team makeup a little bit. You know, dynasty leagues.
How close you are.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, how close you are, how good you think you are at the other positions already. I mean, you know. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of in between you and Eli on thinking about the future, but I'm not certain that Cano is going to be miles and miles in front of Odor for even the rest of this year. So that makes it kind of a coin flip.
Yeah, 11 years younger.
And I will be the first to admit, like, my strategy in dynasty leagues is not for everyone, and it has. It has pretty mixed results as well. I mean, if you look at, a dynasty league I'm in with Eli, I have won it two of the first 3 years. I finished second the first year, first the second year, and I'm competing in the third year right now. And then there's a dynasty league I'm in with Darius, where I've like been pretty much bottom, and you know, if your win now strategy doesn't work, you could be really building for a long time, which I am in that league with Darius. So, but I've always been a proponent of I want to win now, so I don't worry about 2 seasons from now. I worry about the season I'm in if I'm doing a draft, a restart for a dynasty league. Let's go ahead and move on to David Price, whose results are not matching his contract from the beginning of the year. Eli lives in Boston and hates the Red Sox, so we'll start with you. Eli, are you concerned about David Price going forward, or is this a guy who will turn it around?
I think he's going to turn it around, but there's also some reason to be concerned. He's lost 1.5 miles on his fastball. That's a big deal. And I know he's been disappointing, but he's still on pace for 261 Ks in 230 innings. The BABIP is 321, easily a career worst. So you got to think that's going to go down, and then that'll drop his ERA. His FIP is a full run lower than ERA, so luck clearly has not been on his side. And also part of this is that he's pitching in a hitter's park, which is never great. But I just think he's too good. He always eats innings. He gets stronger as the season goes on, it seems like. So I don't think he's going to wear down whatsoever. It's interesting that opponents are pulling the ball way higher, way more than they ever have before, and they're hitting it harder than before. So again, there are things that are concerning, but he's still got to give you a ton of Ks, and there's really no denying that he's been unlucky. So you got to think that second half will be a little bit better.
Darius, what are your thoughts on David Price moving forward?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident it's going to improve from here. I've noticed that hitters are swinging a lot more at his pitches in the zone than they ever have before, so I don't know if somebody is seeing that they can make an adjustment, maybe swing a little more against him than they have in the past, and he hasn't adjusted to that quite yet, which might account for some of the harder contact he's giving up. But he had a really good start last one before the break, and the underlying stats are all great. His CFIPs are really good, and as Eli said, their FIPs are full run lower. The only bad thing really is that Division Park is going to face a few teams that have got the capability to really beat up on him in some nice parks, but I think it's going to be a pretty good second half from Price, so I have quite a lot of confidence in him.
Where did you end up ranking, or have you gotten to David Price yet in your rankings, Chuck?
I'm trying to decide I pushed pitching up the rankings quite a bit, and now David Price and Lester are kind of right at the top of my list at the start of round five, so I don't have him in the first four rounds. I mean, and maybe some of that is an overreaction to his 4.34 ERA and his 1.19 WHIP, which, by the way, is the worst that it's been since 2010. He's got some really interesting underlying statistics that I found. First of all, early in games, the first 30 pitches of the game, opposing batters are hitting .313 against him with a pretty high walk rate. Anyway, then all of a sudden, then that is next 15 pitches, you know, innings, you know, which it turns out to be mostly innings three through four or late in the fourth inning or what have you, his walk rate just completely jumps sky high. I'm also kind of noting, and maybe I'm trying to be maybe alarmist, you know, he's getting to the point where he's had 1,600 innings in the bigs, including his postseasons. And I'm just wondering if maybe there's a chance that he's starting to get beat up. If I was Boston, I'd be concerned about the end of this deal for sure. I mean, we don't have to be worried about that right now. But, you know, there's some warning signs. He's been really frustrating to own because he's in trouble in the first and second inning of every single start that he's in. So I'm a little more concerned than you guys are, and I'm struggling with keeping him sort of in that sort of top 10 to 14 range in pitching. I'm struggling with it right now.
Yeah, I mean, the things that concern me is one of the things that Eli mentioned. I mean, that opponents are pulling the ball 46.9% of the time on him when his career average before this, or including this, was 35%, 35.7%. So, I mean, I wonder if there is a game-calling issue as well. Aside from the fact that it doesn't seem like he's having is the great command that we're kind of used to from him. But I wonder if there's maybe some pitch mix issues with, you know, kind of a new catcher to him for sure. But also he's, you know, gone through a couple different catchers, you know, since the beginning of the year. And maybe this is something that irons itself out. It's the hardest hard contact percentage against him of his career by far. I mean, we're talking like almost 7% higher than his highest one, which was in 2013. And then, you know, one of the things that isn't as concerning is the home run to fly ball rate. I mean, he's got a 15.2% homer to fly ball rate. That is insanely high. There's no way that's sustainable. Even if it comes down to, you know, 10%, which would still be bad for him and just bad in general. It would limit a lot of the homer damage we're seeing, and that would bring down some of the standard numbers. So I think there's a reason to be concerned, but at the same time, I think there's reasons to be encouraged that that things are going to get better here in the near future.
Well, a semi-interesting side stat is that he's in the top five amongst pitches thrown this year. You know, he is on pace for close to 250 innings pitched. So that part makes some sense. But I'm just telling you, watching him pitch through an inning in and of itself is tiring. If it's one of the first three innings, it just it makes you want to take a nap because he just looks like he should be dead on the vine after inning three.
Maybe while I'm on vacation, I'll rewatch some of his condensed versions of the game and kind of take a look and see more. I haven't seen him live a whole bunch this year, so I'm just kind of speculating that maybe there's some pitch mix issues. But I'm wondering, because I mean his ground ball to fly ball ratio is one of the better ones that we've seen from him. It's his best since 2012. You know, he's got a pretty decent ground ball rate. It's his best, you know, since 2013. So I mean, you know, in the defense behind him is fairly good. So you would think that, you know, the combination of those things mixed in, you know, would give him some, you know, better results there. But the fact that they're pulling the ball almost 50% on him and the home run to fly ball rate is over 15% screams to me that there's location being missed. And that could be partially him, but that also could be partially bad kind of game calling as well.
Justin, well, do yourself a favor. Justin, don't watch David Price starts on your vacation, please. You can do better than that.
I got to figure out some way to ignore my family while I'm stuck in the wilderness with them. Well, that got quiet real quick. Let's move on to a guy that kind of had a hot end of the first half and is widely available on waiver wires. That is Seth Smith. Darius, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Seth Smith going forward? Is he worth a pickup?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's a platoon player, but the Mariners are using him the best way you can. You know, they're just basically not starting him against lefties at all. I think he's got less than 10% of his plate appearances against left-handed pitchers this year. And he's always been a guy who crushes righties. Safeco is actually not that bad a place to hit left-handed homers either. So it's not quite such a bad park to be in as you might think. The other good thing is that with Nori Aoki being terrible, the Mariners don't have an awful lot else there. So I don't think he's going to lose too much of that playing time. I think when a right-hander's starting, then he's in the lineup. So if you're in the kind of league where you can afford to have a guy who isn't going to play every day, then I'd get him in there because you can pretty much bank on his production against righties.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Seth Smith moving forward?
Yeah, I suppose 14-team leagues, 16-team leagues. He's a nice guy to have on your bench to fill in, or if someone gets hurt, he's a good guy to go grab that won't hurt you for a couple weeks. And he's going to hit 260 with some power. He's not going to give you much else, but, you know, he's more of a distant injury replacement kind of guy or cheap DFS play versus righties for me. But, you know, you could do worse off the bench, I guess.
Yeah, that's my best use for him is DFS, you know, in the right platoon situations. I tend to stick away from guys that have that don't play you know, against one side or the other, unless it's Jock Peterson, because I've got an insane man crush on him. I've liked Seth Smith. He's a guy who's on a number of my AL-only teams because there you do just need people who are playing, even if it is only against lefties or righties. So, but for the most part, I'm probably sticking away from Seth Smith in mixed leagues just because of platoon issues, especially the deeper the formats you get. Because those are the parts where at bats are real currency, where you really need to roster as many at bats as you can. And if he's not getting out there, you know, a third of the time, that tends to add up. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Seth Smith moving forward?
Well, you know, he had 5 home runs in 7 games, and he's only got 11 home runs overall. I mean, my general, I'm in consensus with the opinions that we've heard so far that, you know, he's a good fill-in if the matchups are right. If you're in weekly leagues, you have to check and make sure there's not too many lefties on the mound. You know, he's hitting 277. The Mariners in general have been kind of hot. Their offense especially has been hot over the last few weeks. You know, he's only got 21 at-bats on the entire season against left-handed pitching. He's just got limited upside at 33 years old. He's one of the myriad of Billy Beane failures in recent years in Oakland, as I had to enjoy watching, watch Drew Pomeranz be in the All-Star game while Yonder Alonso, the first baseman he traded for, even up, is dreaming of, what he's going to be doing next year since he won't even be in the league.
You just always need to take a shot at Billy Beane.
I don't know how he has a job. I just don't get it.
You say that like every week. I totally get it. I disagree with you, but I get it. Let's move on to Kenta Maeda, who is another guy having kind of an underrated season, and in the last his last start of the. First half, he had his best start, or one of his best starts, gave up only one earned run, 13 strikeouts in 7 innings against the San Diego Padres. Chuck, this was a guy that I was kind of out on because I just didn't know what to expect. I didn't trust. I thought he was going to be overdrafted. He's giving back a pretty nice return so far on the season. Do you think this is sustainable rest of the way? Or would this be a great time to sell Maeda?
I think it's probably sustainable. There's a lot to really like about his stat line right now, even with the 13 Ks versus San Diego. You know, 107 strikeouts and 100 and a little over 103 innings is great. The odd thing, the thing that really jumps off the page to me is that I kept hearing in the preseason that he's a control guy, he's really not a strikeout guy, you know, this, that, and everything else. But now in this offensive climate, you don't have to be overpowering to be a strikeout guy. You know, we're going to talk about Marco Estrada later. He's a guy, you know, Jay Happ has 32 strikeouts in his last 23 innings pitched. I mean, you don't have to be overpowering to be a strikeout guy anymore. You know, a 2.95 ERA and a 1.07 whip. You know, if you want to be negative about Maeda, what you'd like to see, and some of this obviously is because he's in the National League and it, because the offense hasn't been great behind him, but he's pitched into the seventh or longer in only four of his last 10 games started. And that's what's keeping him out of the elite pitching ranks. But for where you drafted him, I think Kenta Maeda is a goldmine, and I would ride the wave if I owned him right now.
Yeah, he currently, I believe, is in the top 15 of starting pitchers for the season on the ESPN Player Rater. I want to say he is, trying to find it real quick, yes, 14th. So just below Danny Salazar and above, or just below Danny Salazar and John Lester and above Stephen Wright and Rich Hill. I'm very skeptical. I think as teams start seeing him a second, third, fourth time and things like that, that there's going to be some regression. You look at the kind of the XFIP and the FIP, and there seems to me a lot of regression kind of coming down the pike. But you can't really argue with the results so far. August Fagerstrom of FanGraphs did a fantastic piece on him at the end of June. I definitely suggest going and checking it out. And one of the things he highlighted were kind of the lowest exit velocities allowed by pitchers this season. And Maeda is third, and right behind Scott Kazmir and CC Sabathia, who are two guys who don't necessarily have overpowering stuff anymore, but seem to limit the hard contact against them. I think there are reasons to be encouraged. I'm petrified of kind of a cliff that he could fall off at some point, but I would probably try to sell. If I could get a top 20 starting pitcher right now, I probably would take it, but I understand if people don't want to. Darius, what are your thoughts on Maeda rest of the way?
Well, I really like what he's done so far. I'll second the August Fagerstrom article recommendation, because that was another great piece by August. And one thing I really liked there was how he locates his slider sort of outside both righties and lefties, which is quite an unusual approach. It's really interesting stuff there. I, too, have questions about how the league's going to adjust to him the second time through. What I'm seeing is more strikeouts and a few more walks than I expected. So I wonder perhaps if the second time around we might see that strikeout rate drop, but perhaps also he will display a bit more of the command that people expected him to show when he came into the league. The other thing I worry about is obviously this weird contract they've got him on is a sign that the Dodgers had some pretty significant medical concerns going forward. So I do wonder whether we'll start to see signs of him perhaps not being as durable as you might like. But from what I've seen so far, I'm very encouraged. He's an impressive pitcher, and I think probably at least for this season, I expect it to more or less sustain.
Eli, are you buying, selling on Maeda rest of the way?
I'm buying. I do think Justin made some good points about why you should be concerned potentially. Just second time through the league might be an adjustment for him. Also, the BABIP is 274, so that could take a jump up. His left on base percentage is very high at 79%, so that could go down as well. But I still think he's going to be great the rest of the way. He was dynamite out of the gate, then he struggled a bit in May, then he turned things back around in June, so that's encouraging. Over the strikeout per inning, he doesn't allow many hits at all. His walks are pretty decent. They don't kill you at all. Again, I've mentioned this many podcasts. He pitches in the best park in baseball. It's such a great place to pitch. Almost anybody can be successful there. And with someone like his talent, he can be really good there. And he's shown that. And I don't really worry that he's going to wear down, because he's only on pace for 183 innings right now. So they're kind of limiting his workload. Chuck kind of mentioned he's not going all that deep in the game. So that's probably going to bode well for him moving forward. So I'm optimistic that he's going to maintain that top 20 status the rest of the way.
In a quality start league, does that kind of temper his value, though, because, I mean, I'm looking at his game log right now, and aside from the fact that one-third of his games he doesn't qualify from an earned run standpoint for a quality start, he also has a number of games. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven of his 18 starts this year, he hasn't gone six innings. How much would you lower him in a quality start league as opposed to a wins league?
Yeah, I think it takes a little bit of a hit, but it's also reasonable to think that now that he's acclimated himself and been good, that he's going to go a little bit deeper into games moving forward. Especially with Kershaw out right now, they're going to need him to be a little bit more of a horse. So, I don't know. I don't think I'd knock him too much.
And, I mean, the only thing I will say in terms of maybe I could be wrong on in the fact that as teams start seeing him a second and third time, that he may struggle against them is the team he had his best start against, San Diego. He's seen them three times already this year. So, though San Diego is just absolutely dreadful, so that could be the reason.
Yeah, that's probably a factor.
Let's move on over to Jose Bautista. We're going to talk about a couple guys who are kind of on the DL and kind of what our thoughts rest the way for them. He's on the DL with a toe injury. It doesn't seem to be extremely serious. He began hitting off a tee on Saturday, according to Ben Nicholson Smith. Where do you guys kind of rank him rest the way? Is he still an elite player, Eli?
Yikes. I'm looking at his numbers. I didn't realize he's been as unproductive as he's been. I mean, he's still been okay, but the 230 average is the lowest it's been since 2004, I think. He's only on pace for about 23 homers. I'm not too worried about the DL stint. I think it was more of a, like, kind of like Justin said, like, it was all-star break time, a chance to give him some extra rest. Like, I don't think it's serious, so I think he'll be back. The lineup is heating up. Obviously, it's a great place to hit, so I do expect him to have a better second half, but this is a guy that's going to be 36 in a few months, so, you know, I think expecting some regression from his consistent 30-plus homer seasons was reasonable to suspect, so I think he'll have a better second half than his first half, but I think the days of him being a super elite outfielder might be done.
Chuck, where did you have him in your kind of rankings update that you're going through right now?
I dropped him all the way down to 45 overall, which was 19 spots less than his preseason ADP, which, you know, sometimes there's just been a lot of really good offensive seasons, so some people have jumped past some of these guys. But in Bautista's case, he's played his way down the rankings. You know, he's also got age. Father Time is against him a little bit because his career started so late in his, his career surge started so late in his progression. And he's coming up on a new contract, so he's got every reason to try and bounce back here. I think unless I needed lightning in a bottle, if I was in a league where I just needed an offensive push no matter what, or I was going to fall out of it, this is the kind of guy that I would hope maybe the injury is what was bothering him and keeping him down. But otherwise, long term, I think I'm going to steer very, very, very clear of Bautista in years going forward.
Darius, is this a guy you would try to buy low on right now before he comes back off the DL, or are you kind of avoiding him?
I think I would give it a shot, especially if I was in a league where, yeah, like Chuck says, it's sort of a lightning in a bottle situation, and maybe you need a bit more of a desperation move. I think it's worth a go. But I'm a little bit more worried about the injury than you guys seem to be. I think it was diagnosed as turf toe. Bautista's not the kind of guy who you would worry too much about running, but it does really affect people's ability to push off, so it might make him a little bit slower. And you might lose a few bases as a result, remember, drop a few doubles down. And he has been a guy, he always sort of chips in a few sneaky steals, kind of 7, 8, 9 steals, I think, over the last few years. So I wouldn't count on any of those the rest of the way. But in terms of the production overall, I expect a few more homers. He's been kind of unlucky with this home run to fly ball rate, but the profile underneath looks the same. He's hitting the ball just as hard, and he obviously still plays in a great park. So if he does make it back healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another 15 to 20 homers the rest of the way from him.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between on how worried I am about him. The turf toe does worry me a little bit, though. I mean, they can always DH him a little bit more. and just put someone else out in the outfield. Maybe they could stop hating on Dalton Pompey a little bit and bring his ass up. You know, I mean, there's some things that are a little worrisome to me. You know, how low is BABIP? And he's a guy who you know, over the course of the last 5-6 years has had a pretty low BABIP to begin with. And so, you know, at first I was like, oh, that BABIP seems awfully low, but it's you know, it's actually higher than it was last year. 239 BABIP this year. It was at 237 all of last season. So I don't know how. I mean, there should be some growth in the average department when he comes back, but I mean, that's not necessarily guaranteed. I think part of his struggles were, I think they were going through team struggles. The entire team was struggling for the first couple months of the season. Then he got hurt before or as they were starting to turn it around as a team. So maybe this is, you know, something where he comes back. The team is hot. He gets a little bit hotter. I mean, worst case scenario, you know, you're not going to get draft day value, but you should be able to still get close to draft day value for him if you try to sell him right now. One, in spite of the fact that he hasn't had a great first half, it's not that far off from being a pretty decent season if you project it out rest of the way. And two, he still has great name value, still hitting in one of the best parks in baseball, on one of the best offenses in baseball. So I think if you wanted to sell him, I think you could get pretty fair value, but I don't think you necessarily need to going forward.
Justin, I wanted to say real quick, Justin, I think it's time to get out the Dalton Pompey train. I was obsessed with him, but he has not been very good in AAA.
He's been injured.
I know, but he's played 50 games almost, and he's got a 333 slugging. He's getting caught stealing a ton. He's giving no power. He used to show a little bit of power. I know he's still only 23. I think he needs to change the scenery. I just don't think it's going to happen in Toronto.
I don't think it's going to happen in Toronto either. And it's something I've written about a little bit at FanCrafts is they just don't seem to like him. They've soured on him. But there was a reason he was a top, you know, tier prospect, and he was on everybody's sleeper list coming into last season. I mean, this guy, he has talent. He has speed. You know, he should have gotten a real shot when Kevin Pillar was struggling at the beginning of the season, but now Pillar has turned it back around, so that kind of ends that. I have faith in Dalton Pompey going forward for the rest of his career, but I agree that I think he probably does need to change the scenery. Maybe he's a piece that could get traded at the trade deadline if Toronto's looking to improve somewhere else. Chuck, did you have something else?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, because I just did this exercise, some of these things come to my head, but I really struggled with if I should put Bautista ahead of Adam Jones or the other way around. So I'm wondering for the rest of the year if you would rather have Adam Jones or Jose Bautista.
I think I'd rather have Jones because he's healthy now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even obviously the negative with Jones has always been his plate discipline. But I was just curious. Maybe Eli.
I think maybe in an average league, I would take Jones. In an OBP league, I'd take Bautista.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think I definitely Bautista in OBP. I think Justin's right that you've got to take Jones. We don't actually have a timetable exactly for when Bautista's coming back, so you know you could easily get 2 or 3 weeks more production out of Jones as well.
I think you know that he's hitting off a tee. That Bautista's hitting off a tee is encouraging, but I want to see him making cuts. With the turf toe.
Very fair.
And then, you know, obviously running in a straight line as well. But, we see turf toe being more of an issue typically in the NFL as opposed to Major League Baseball. And for good reason. But at the same time, you know, you can't hit a double if you can't run to second base.
Well, we have the example as well that Corey Dickerson really, really struggled with his turf toe issue last year. That was the issue that destroyed his season. And Corey Dickerson was, 10 years younger in that range than Bautista is. So
Dickerson probably also struggled because he's not good at baseball. But
yeah. How dare you?
Sorry, Mike Werner.
But he's got so many home runs. let's move on before I start getting really angry at Eli and talk about John Lester, who had a really nice start of the season, but has had a pretty rough kind of end of the first half. I want to kind of check in and see where here's perceived value is to you guys. Chuck, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on John Lester moving forward?
Well, the odd thing about talking about any Cubs pitcher right now is you have to decide if sort of there's a team-wide free fall going on with their pitching staff or not. But I do think Lester is a special case because a couple years ago, I thought he was a pretty inconsistent pitcher. And then, you know, he basically had 2.5 years of consistency. And I thought we were past sort of these ups and downs, despite the fact that inexplicably he can't throw to first base to check on base runners. I'm kind of in a petrified mode about the Cubs starters right now. Trying to figure out what's going on because, you know, I remember the good year that the Brewers had when we had all that pitching. Our pitching was terrible by the time we got to the playoffs, and I've thought that was the big hurdle for the Cubs all the way along. And now all of a sudden, you know, Arrieta hasn't been good, Lester hasn't been good, Lackey hasn't been good. I mean, is it possible that some bad pitching or some extra stress is going to come out of this situation? And if so, you know, I have extra concern about Lester right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, I mean, before the last two starts, he had an ERA almost at 2.03, and just two starts, and he's, you know, kind of like right back up to, I believe, like a 3 ERA. So, I'm not necessarily as worried about him kind of moving forward. As maybe I should be. I wonder if there was just some fatigue issues with the amount of innings he had kind of thrown recently before the last two starts. I mean, he had gone at least 7 innings in, I believe, all but one of his previous like 7 starts. So I just wonder maybe if he got a little worn down as the season progressed. And, you know, maybe this time off is a little bit of a shot in the arm for him. But, you know, if he's getting tired already, he still has another half of a season to go. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Lester moving forward?
I think this is probably just a little bit of correction. You know, he had the stats of a top 5 pitcher, and I think he's kind of at the back end of that elite tier, maybe, you know, the best number 2 starter, kind of that range. So the 2 ERA was just a little bit outlandish. Obviously, you're worried when you see a couple of starts like the last two he's just had. But I couldn't find anything, you know, I didn't see anything that concerned me. And there's no indication that he's struggling through an injury as far as I'm aware. So I think it's just a case of him having a couple of really bad starts in a row. And now his ERA just great rather than excellent. So I'm not too worried until I see something, you know, maybe come out that he is struggling with something. Then I'm not going to be too concerned. Apart from the fact that he can't throw to first base, which does terrify me, but everybody's known about it for ages now, and it doesn't actually seem to affect him that much, apart from the odd base runner. So,
which I don't understand. Like, how can you throw like home pitch with like such, you know, precision command at points and not get it to first base? I mean, it's obviously a case of the yips. I mean, you know, but like I don't understand like how that is so much more difficult.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I can't really imagine, you know, I suppose until you've been a major league pitcher, maybe it's impossible to imagine, but it seems so strange that you can throw the ball over the plate at, you know, 90 plus miles per hour, but you can't toss it casually to first base. I don't really understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we can't really quantify, you know, like I said, not being major league players, and then through the numbers. I mean, there's just no way to quantify, like, what the issue is. Other than he's just got something in his head about throwing to first base.
It makes me so happy. Like, everyone's favorite thing in baseball is watching Bartolo Colon hit. Mine is anytime a ball gets hit in John Lester's direction, I get, like, so excited. Like, what's going to happen? Is he going to throw the ball in the stands and kill a fan? Like, is he just going to, like, pick it up and shrug his shoulders, like and not throw it? I just, it's so exciting to me when John Lester has the ball in his hands.
For me, it's when he's playing a team like the Reds who like to run.
Yes. Billy like, Hamilton, yes.
Yeah, the apathy he shows towards throwing to first to hold runners on, it's just, you know, just ridiculous. Like, he just doesn't give a shit at all, and teams just run all over him. But Eli, what are your thoughts on Lester from a pitching standpoint rest of the way?
You know, normally I wouldn't be worried about him because he's about as consistent as it comes. He's going to give you 200 innings. He's got to give you about 200 strikeouts and have solid ERAs and whips and get you a handful of wins. But I'm a little bit more concerned. It's not just the two starts in a row that have been bad. I'm, you know, that does worry me a little bit. But if you look at some of his numbers, Yeah, his left on base percentage is 84%. Methinks that's coming down. His BABIP is at 266. I think that's the lowest it's ever been. So he's going to start stranding less runners. He's going to, the BABIP's going to come up. His home, he's given up a home runs at the highest rate he's ever done before. I think there's a lot of things to worry about here. He's got a lot of innings in, on that arm. He's pitched about 200 innings or so, about like 8 years in a row. I mean, I know he's still pretty reliable, and you know he's not going to kill you. But I do worry that this is going to be the start of a fairly big decline for Lester.
All right. Well, let's before we move on, actually, real quick, let's figure out where we each have him kind of in our pitching starting pitcher ranks rest of the way. Let's do kind of a would you rather real quick. Rest of the way, would you take John Lester or Kenta Maeda? I'm going Lester.
Yeah, I'll take Lester.
It's close. I want to say Maeda just because of the ballpark, but I guess you know Lester's just going to give you more innings, and he's on a better team, so that gives me the Lester edge there.
I'm taking Lester, but I'm petrified about it.
All right, Lester or his soon-to-be teammate Rich Hill?
I'd love to take Rich Hill, but I just can't trust Rich Hill to stay healthy. If I knew that Rich Hill would pitch the rest of the season, then I would take Hill.
For the next 3 weeks, I'll take Rich Hill. for the rest of the season, I'll take John Lester.
Yeah,
as soon as he gets traded out of Oakland, you mean?
Yeah.
Let's see, Lester or a guy who may run into innings issues later on in the season, Aaron Sanchez.
I think they're almost certain to take Sanchez out well before we get to the end of the year. So I've got to take Lester again then.
Yeah, it's such a bummer because I love Sanchez so much.
Yeah.
Don't you think you have to move up the rankings a little bit? And maybe, you know, since I did this routine or practice recently, you know, I have him more around guys like, you know, Price and Quintana, and Tehran than the guys that you're giving us now.
Carlos Martinez or Lester?
Carlos Martinez, not close.
Yeah, it's not close to me either. I moved him up the rankings to you.
You're Jose, a great host, Justin.
Jose Quintana?
Quintana.
Yeah, start with Eli. I'll take Lester, but it's close.
You piece of shit.
I'm going to take Lester because of the National League.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it is a lot closer.
I said
closer
it was
than...
close, Eli.
I just want us to acknowledge that Quintana is a better pitcher and that Lester's just in the much better situation. Can we all agree?
Whatever makes you happy.
That's just the truth, man.
Why don't we Jared DeGrom?
Jared DeGrom?
Jacob DeGrom. I don't know why I always call him Jared.
DeGrom.
All right, yeah, I'm taking DeGrom.
Plenty.
Yeah, DeGrom for me.
All right, last one. Let's do David Price. We've already talked about him or our thoughts on him or the rest of the way.
That's a good one.
I'm going to take Price as I feel like I was more confident on him than everyone else.
I'm going to go Price too. But it's close.
That's
the right thing.
Yeah, you're semi-asking for a bounce back. I mean, I know it's only been two bad starts for Lester, but you're semi-asking for a bounce back for both. And I think Price has more upside, which is quite a compliment because Lester can be quite good.
My biggest concern with Price is the AL East in that kind of comparison.
Yeah.
The AL East versus the NL Central, you know.
If Price pitched in the NL Central, it wouldn't be close.
I don't think it would be either. Let's go ahead and move on to a guy that hasn't played in quite a long time because he's been suspended for PEDs, but D. Gordon's making his way back here shortly. I believe he is eligible to come back on the 28th of July or around
2 weeks from now, basically.
Yeah, so I just want to kind of gauge everybody's thoughts on Gordon moving forward, once he does come back, does he turn back into an elite player for you guys, or are you worried about rust? Are you worried about the amount of time off, or even, you know, another suspension or something like that? What are your thoughts on D. Gordon rest the way, Eli?
I think it's reasonable to expect a little bit of rust, but I still think he's going to be fairly elite. I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of guys these days that steal a ton of bases. D. Gordon will be that guy, and he's going to be hitting atop, a pretty special lineup with Yelich, Stanton, Ozuna, Boer when he comes back. That's a pretty good lineup, so you got to think steals are going to happen, a lot of runs, a fairly good average. I think he's going to be a top five second baseman borderline when he comes back immediately.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I wonder maybe if the rust affects his stolen bases, but I mean, if I was to ask you how many players could you name that has the potential to steal 20 or more stolen bases from the beginning of August on, he's got to be a guy at the top of your list.
Yeah, what are the other ones? Like Hamilton and Altuve? Is that just about it?
Yeah, I mean, well, and even Altuve. Altuve hasn't been stealing as much because it's hard to steal bases when you're hitting home runs. There are very few guys that, you know, could probably do that. And with the way power has been up even more this year than it was last year, where it was up kind of from what we thought was the mean, stolen bases are becoming even more valuable than they've been in the past. So a guy like D. Gordon could be a game changer for a lot of teams in fantasy. Darius, what are your thoughts on Gordon moving forward?
Well, I wanted to see what people thought about the possibility that he might not, you know, just slot straight back into the lineup, because Derek Dietrich is playing really, really well. Martin Prado's been great. And I'm not sure what the feeling around Gordon is and how they're going to deal with him in a sort of lineup managerial sense. But he also can't play in the postseason. So if the Marlins are in contention there, how do you guys really think that's going to play in? Because I wonder whether Gordon is actually going to go straight back into the lineup and play every day.
Did you say he's not eligible for the postseason?
That's how it works, I believe. Yeah, once you get the suspension, it's not only is it the 80 games, but you also are not eligible for the postseason.
I thought you were eligible. I'm not 100% sure, but I thought you were eligible if your suspension ended before the start of the postseason.
Yeah, I think they might.
I feel like Darius might be wrong. Well, I'll look it up while you guys are talking.
I don't think the huge contract that Miami gave him or that he has right now, I think will warrant him getting back in lineup. Miami is not a team that spends a lot of money. The amount of money they are spending, to have him on the team, will force the management's, choice to put him back in the lineup. Dietrich's been great. And filled in very admirably, but he can also play all over the diamond, and I think that he goes back to being a super utility type.
Darius is right, ineligible.
Oh wow, I did not even realize. I did not know that.
I'm sorry for doubting you, Darius.
Always be sorry if you doubt Darius.
You'll learn over time, guys.
But I mean, this is a team that, you know, currently they are tied with the Mets. In second place in the East, and I believe that puts them right in the thick of the wild card. They're tied with the Mets for both the wild card positions, one game ahead of the Cardinals, game and a half ahead of the Pirates. So, I mean, they're going to, I think, put their best team on the field. You know, there's no sense in saving or preparing for the playoffs if you're not guaranteed to be in it. So I think if they feel that D. Gordon gives them the best chance to win, he's going to be out there. And yeah, you would have to assume he does. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Gordon rest of the way?
Well, I think, you know, I tied D. Gordon in with Jose Reyes to an extent. I mean, obviously, PEDs versus the abuse thing, there's a bit of a difference. But I think these guys get challenged in ways like their human side gets challenged. Like now D. Gordon has got a chip on his shoulder where everyone's like, well, he really wasn't that good. He was just taking these PEDs to get a contract, etc. And I think he's going to play with a chip on his shoulder for a while, which is what I've always felt about Jose Reyes coming back. I mean, his entire career has been threatened. He is no longer a major league player, according to public opinion. And so I think you get this sort of caged dog or cornered dog effect that happens. And I think you're going to get the best. You're going to get the best that you can possibly get out of Gordon. And he's got. He signed an extension. I want to say it was before last season. He signed an extension. So the Marlins are pretty heavily invested in him. So despite the danger, and as much as I don't like to disagree with Darius, I think they're going to put D. Gordon right back in the lineup. And I think you're going to see him playing like a man on fire. I think he's going to play really hard the rest of the season.
I hear this kind of argument all the time. And so I'm not just beating you up, Chuck, cause I don't know if you've heard me rant on this before.
I haven't.
And those of you who haven't, heard the football podcast last year, I used to make this rant all the time, with, Mike and I think maybe Eli once or twice. The idea that guys are like extra motivated with chips on their shoulder, is absolutely ridiculous to me. These guys are professionals. They have these chips on their shoulder all year long. I don't think that makes a difference. I don't think he's going to try harder because he has something to prove now. You have to be a professional to make it in the professional leagues of sports. And the idea that some of these guys, you know, get extra juice to Tom Brady's because they have a chip on their shoulder because the world's against them. I think is absolutely ludicrous. I actually argued with someone on Twitter this morning about this, from a football sense. Rant over. Eli, what are your thoughts on D. Gordon?
I've already given them, by the way.
I'm actually
motivated to dominate this podcast because I hate you so much.
And we'll argue at a different date.
I mean, that's a really low bar to set, Eli.
On Justin's point, though, I kind of agree. Also, that could work against somebody. Let's say they do try harder. Sometimes trying harder and pressing too much is bad for your performance. So, yeah, I'm kind of with Justin on this one.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there are definitely guys that are unmotivated that coast by on just natural God-given ability.
Hanley Ramirez.
Oh my God, we both said it at the same time.
But I think for the most part, professionals are professional for a reason. You know, I mean, you don't make it out of the minor leagues, you don't make it out of college or high school to the professional ranks without having motivation. I'm not a believer in any of that. For the same reason, like, I'm not a huge believer in like the crowd energy, like influencing people.
Do you believe in love, Justin?
I do not.
So I have a side question.
I've been married
for you,
twice, so that's one reason why.
Justin, why do they say going into spring training that some people are in the best shape of their career, or some people get in shape or out of shape? I mean, if they're all professionals, then they're like robots, and they're all in peak physical condition every single day of their life.
Well, I think we learn every year that when people are like in the best shape of their career, that's bullshit 95% of the time.
Well, you're by Pablo Sandoval, so you're like,
well, and but like I said, I think there are extreme examples. Sure. And I also think life happens, not everybody is gifted with the type of metabolism and body that is easy to maintain. And I think we forget that because these guys are professional athletes, but especially in baseball and then in the heavier positions in football, you know, it's not always easy to be a guy who can control their weight and can control their physical size. I know this firsthand because, you know, when I was playing football and lacrosse growing up and, in college and things like that, I had a very hard time maintaining my weight. I had to work very hard to do it, and some guys don't. And then it changes as guys get older. So I don't necessarily believe that is a matter of desire or something that we can measure in that regards. And sometimes guys, they learn from mistakes. You know, maybe they don't take care as good of care of their bodies over the course of one season. They come back and have a renewed kind of diligence to that. but I don't think that means that some guy wants it more or less necessarily.
Justin, you mentioned that life happens. Is that why Bartolo Colon's fat? He's got a secret family and he's eating away his sorrows.
Dude, that is a thin layer of fat just covering like a massive amount of misshapen muscle. I mean, did you see that home run? Are you kidding me? He's a triple short of a cycle for the season.
Why does Bartolo Colon have like multiple families? Like that big, fat, ugly dude who used steroids and I can't get a girl? God damn it.
This podcast has gone completely off the rails.
It always does.
It's my fault.
let's move on away from Eli's dating life because that is a rabbit hole that underlying statistics cannot cover. Let's move on to Cole Hamels, who very similar to John Lester, has had a pretty nice year. And then last few starts were not very good. Is this a sign of something to be worried about, Darius?
Well, I'm going to use this now because it felt like the best spot. I would say that given his whip and his walk rate, that ERA lacks verisimilitude to me because you don't really get a 3.21 ERA with a 1.33 whip very often. So I'm a little bit worried about Hamels. I think Texas is not a great place to pitch over the summer. I don't know where the increased walks have come from, but they've gone up quite a lot. His first strike percentage is way down, so he's falling behind in the count very often. And I think the 3.21 ERA is covering up a lot of problems here that I'm not convinced he's going to fix. So I'm pretty down on Hamels the rest of the way, I have to say.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Hamels moving forward?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Darius. The ERA is a little bit fluky to me. His pitching, his FIP is 4.56. He's stranding base runners at a career high rate right now, so he's been getting a little fortunate on that front. So I think if he continues to walk guys and give up homers at a really high clip like he is doing right now, and it's not a great place to pitch either. So I do think that the second half is going to be pretty bad for him if he pitches like he's been pitching.
All right, Chuck, what are your thoughts on him moving forward? Chuck, are you on?
I think it's sell. I'm not on mute, but I'm having a hard time hearing you guys. Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, we're hearing you just fine.
Oh, okay. No, I literally, I think that that he's really going to struggle in the second half, and I would sell if you can find somebody that will give you Cole Hamels like value for him. All these underlying numbers look really bad, it's hard to imagine Texas playing as well as they've played so far this year for the rest of the season, and his underlying numbers just point to a downturn of pretty dramatic proportions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty worried about it. Worried about Cole Hamels as well. I mean, the underlying statistics really point to a ton of regression coming very, very quickly. A 4.56 FIP, a 4.13 X FIP are massive jumps over his ERA currently. And even his Sierra is pretty high at 4.19. So. The walks are concerning. I think somebody at Fangraphs did an article about his changeup and his changeup usage, him not throwing it as much, it not being as good. I'm trying to remember who it was, but that's kind of a field pitch, and maybe he's having issue fielding the ball well. And if that is the case, then maybe there's a lingering issue, an injury issue. I know that he's been fairly healthy the last few years, or actually for quite a while, but he did have injury issues at points earlier in his career. So maybe there's something going on there that we're not seeing and being able to quantify. But yeah, I think if you can sell Cole Hamels, I think now is the time. Let's go ahead and move on to Hunter Pence, who is one of my favorite players, is an absolute hilarious person to follow on Twitter, and should be coming off the DL here shortly. So I wanted to, again, gauge your guys' kind of level of interest on a guy who's been injured but will be coming back soon. Darius, you're a fellow Giants fan. What are your thoughts on Hunter Pence going forward?
Well, I'm pretty worried about Hunter. Obviously, I love him from a purely subjective giant standpoint, and I can't wait for him to come back. It looks like it's probably going to be around last week of July. But he's 33 now. He's just had hamstring surgery. Those two things don't really sound great to me. He's been very good when he's been on the field this year, but he's had real trouble. He's missed almost half the Giants games already, and he hasn't attempted a steal either. So I think the days of him giving you a few in that category are gone. Maybe if he plays the rest of the way, you could get like another 7, 8, 9 homers from him if you're lucky. But I think they might be pretty cautious with him coming off this surgery. And as we know, hamstrings have a tendency to flare up again. So, yeah, I'm pretty down on Pence the rest of the way as well, I have to say.
I'm not as down as you on him. I think when he comes back, I think they're going to throw him back kind of into the fire because they have to. I mean, that offense needs him, and that outfield needs him. I mean, they've gotten by with Mack Williamson and Jarrett Parker, but how long can they really expect to do that? I mean, it's been amazing actually what the Giants have been able to kind of pull off in terms of a winning record. And the best record in baseball in the first half, considering they're missing Matt Duffy, Hunter Pence, and I'm forgetting somebody else. That's
Panic.
Panic. Thank you. And I just wrote about him, for FanGraphs a little bit today, so I should have remembered that. But I think they need him. They can't expect to win without him. And you know the rest of those pieces that are missing in that lineup. And so I think they're going to have to throw him back in the fire. I'm not as worried. I think they wouldn't be bringing him back as quickly as they are if it wasn't for the fact they were very confident that he's not going to re-injure himself. The Giants are a pretty smart organization, tend to handle injuries fairly well. So I'm a little bit more encouraged. I agree with you that maybe the stolen bases won't reappear, the ones we saw in 2014, 2013. But I think you can reasonably expect, 7 to 11 home runs the rest of the year with good counting stats and a pretty decent average moving forward. Eli, what are your thoughts on Pence?
You'll probably hit like 280 with a decent amount of runs, homers, and RBIs, but nothing too special. And like Darius said, he's probably not going to run, obviously, with the hamstring injury. And last year, in 50 games, he only stole 4, so the days of him stealing 10-plus, that's over. I think people give him a hard time for being injury-prone, but before last year, the guy was about as consistent as it came with 150-plus games, so I think
he deserves... And last year's was an extremely fluke injury.
Yes, so, yeah. But, again, like Darius said, he's 33 coming off of fairly major surgery, and, you know, obviously, he's not going to run as well as he usually does, so that's going to hurt him across the board. But I still think he'll be a decently solid guy that will help out in a few categories.
Chuck, are you trying to buy on Hunter Pence right now, or is this a guy you're kind of avoiding?
Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody selling him now because they've waited all this time for him to get back. I agree with what people are saying about Hunter Pence. I just also think, that traditionally his value and his name recognition built up because you were going to get across the board production from him. So right now, if you're a Pence owner, I think you install him back in your lineup and you hope for the best. But if you need him to be more than your third outfielder, I think you're probably in trouble because the age curve mixed with that ballpark not being very easy to hit in, plus there's some pretty decent pitching in that division. It seems to me like I would I'm not too hopeful that you're going to get more than any of the projections that you guys are talking about, which is a high end number 3 or ugly low end number 2 outfielder to me.
All right, let's do a would you rather rest of the way with outfielders. I'm going to start fairly low. Would you rather have Melky Cabrera or Hunter Pence rest of the way?
I'll still take Pence then.
I think I'm taking Pence as well there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Pence as well.
Brett Gardner?
Gardner for me, I think.
Yep.
It's really close. I think I'll... I'll take Gardner, but Gardner is probably a little more hit or miss. He's got a lower floor.
I think if I need the speed, then I'm taking Gardner. But all things being equal, I think I'd rather have Pence. I think he'd contribute in more categories. Let's see, Matt Kemp or Hunter Pence?
Anybody but Kemp.
I'm done with Kemp. I do think Kemp is, you know, when they're both 100% healthy and going right, I think Kemp is the better player at this point. But I don't trust Kemp at all with the hip issue.
Darius?
Kemp's also given up walking, which I hate. So it's difficult. That's a close one for me. I'll take Pence just because he's a giant.
Yeah, Kemp's got a 275 OBP. Like, he's not good.
Yeah. Like, if you're in an OBP league, then yeah, that's just going to kill you. That's horrible.
Cole Calhoun.
Man, I haven't heard anyone say that guy's name in like 2 years.
For good reason.
Yes, he's so boring.
I got in an argument with Joe Pisapia on SiriusXM. I think it was prior to the start of the season on Cole Calhoun because he gave me like a list of players. I'm like, well, we could just cross Cole Calhoun off that list.
I'm taking Calhoun though. Actually, he's been pretty
really.
Decent. He's on pace for 100 runs, 18 homers, 86 RBIs. And a 288
that lineup is only going to get worse in Los Angeles or in Anaheim. He's only got 10 home runs.
Yeah,
288 average is.
I mean, how many? Like, I don't think you're going to get that many more home runs from Pence over Calhoun. Exactly. The rest of the way, and you know Calhoun's playing now, so I'm still taking Calhoun.
I'm taking Pence. Maybe it's the homerism.
I was going to say there's only one homer on this podcast. And I think we all know who it is.
if I had to, I would take Calhoun as well. I mean, I know it seems unlikely at this point, but if you told me that one of those guys was going to explode, you know, just the 33 years of age versus Calhoun's, you know, much younger in his career. And I don't think Calhoun's floor is that much worse than Pence's. Yeah. So I think I'll take Calhoun as well.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on then and talk about Marco Estrada, another guy on the DL, but who's having a fantastic year. Up until hitting DL, is the DL since something you're worried about moving forward? And are you buying or selling on Estrada moving forward, Eli?
He's a tough one. How does he have a WHIP under one? That's crazy. I definitely think the second half is going to be worse for him, even without the injury. I would have said that. This is no way he was going to sustain these kind of numbers. He never has before. He's 33. He's a guy that you can rely on not to hurt you, but I don't think. If you're thinking that he's going to continue to be a number two starter for you, then I think you might have some problems. But I think he'll be fine in the second half. I just don't think he's going to put up anything like he's done before.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Estrada moving forward?
Well, we're kind of back into the old Jared Weaver territory here. The BABIP is insane, but he kind of did it last season as well. With I think it was 216, which was the lowest, certainly this century, and probably for a lot longer than that. I wonder just, you know, how much more it's going to keep working, really. I think he can sustain a much lower than average BABIP, but I don't really have a lot of confidence in his contributions, you know, as a fantasy player generally. I don't think the strikeouts are going to stay as high as they are. I think he's probably going to be kind of average, really. Yeah. So certainly somebody who could be valuable, but I'm not really excited about him the rest of the way, and certainly based on his first half, if you can sell him for something more than average, then I'd go and do it.
Yeah, this shouldn't be working, man. He strikes out a decent amount of guys, but he walks a lot, and he doesn't get any ground balls. Like, how is he making this work in Toronto, of all places? It's mind-boggling to me. Like,
it's all pop-ups, right? Like, I think he's got, like, a 17% infield fly ball rate or something crazy like that.
Yeah, 17.6.
That's insane.
That's one of the reasons. I've liked what I've seen from him so far, but I do believe that the numbers we've seen so far are pretty unsustainable. He did a great job at kind of limiting hard contact. I'd love to see what his exit velocity readings are against him, because I bet you that's where he kind of makes his money, is he just limits kind of the exit velocity with the batters that he's facing. But his hard contact percentage, which was really down last year, is gone back up to where it was kind of previous in 2014. So I think that there is probably some worse days ahead for Estrada, but I don't think it's I don't think he's an average pitcher. I think he is better than average. I think he does things with pitch mixing, with placement that really help limit the damage. I just don't know if that is always going to be sustainable, at least at this level moving forward. But I still think he is a top 40 starting pitcher, top 35 starting pitcher the rest of the way. So I don't think, and I don't think the name value is there for him. I don't think people realize what he's doing. So I don't know what you could get that is better than that on the starting pitcher market via trade. So I'm probably holding and riding it as long as he does well. Chuck, what are your thoughts moving forward?
Well, I'm kind of biting my tongue because I'm far more positive than the rest of the people are right now. I know his career probably more intimately than anyone else. I was at his first game when he appeared in Cincinnati. It was an afternoon game. That's where, when they got him from Washington. The thing about Estrada is I firmly believe that the offensive climate now really helps bolster Estrada. Estrada will throw his changeup at any count. He's very good at locating it, and that just feasts on over-aggressive hitting, which all this, all these strikeout totals that we're hearing, including 99 strikeouts and 104 innings pitched for Marco Estrada himself. The fact that hitters are so aggressive right now really plays right into Estrada, who has done a wonderful job of figuring out how to keep hitters' timing off in general. So, I'm more around a top 25 to 30 starter for Estrada, and I'm pretty sure everyone's going to think I'm nuts.
Yep, you're nuts.
I don't think you're nuts, but I think you're a little high on him. But I don't have a problem with that. I was one of the higher people on him coming into the season. So, I mean, I believed what we saw last year. I do worry that maybe the park will factor in a little bit more than it has so far.
He beat his xFIP by 1.80 last year, and he's beating it by 1.60 this year. This is insane.
Some guys do that.
Yeah, I know, but
xFIP is bad with pop-up guys like
yeah.
And it's generally a guy that has a pitch that people really struggle with. Like the recent stretch of Matt Shoemaker was all because everyone was struggling with his split finger pitch and he was throwing it so well, right? Maeda, everyone talks about his slider, and Estrada, that pitch that he relies on, that he has to have, is that changeup. And it's just gotten better and better over time. So I need to study it even further to throw some ideas at you guys because, from watching him regularly, I think Estrada is a guy who's got a pitch that is just absolutely filthy productive in that changeup.
Yeah, and I mean, he's throwing it the most of his career. I mean, and he's not throwing his fastball, which is a bad pitch, very much. I mean, he's throwing his fastball less than 40% of the time right now, which is by far the lowest of his career, and that's the right decision. I mean, like I said before, I think the pitch mixing has been very, very beneficial to him in Toronto. So I'm not buying shares of him, but I'm buying that the drop off isn't going to be as severe as a lot of other people believe. Last guy we're going to talk about is a guy that went on the DL right before the All-Star break, is probably going to miss almost a month, and that's Matt Carpenter. I want to kind of get your guys' feeling real quick on Carpenter moving forward rest of the year. Chuck, what are your thoughts on him?
Well, I think this oblique injury is, they already announced it as a grade 2. I think there's a lot to be concerned about. He's a fantasy guy that owners have a tendency not to love anyway. He sort of slides down drafts to begin with. At first it was because he didn't have any power. And then it was, that everyone thought the power of last year was a fluke. He was having a nice season. So I think if you're a Carpenter owner, you can hope for a full comeback here in maybe, the 5 to 7 week range, I would say. But I'm not real high on him for the rest of this year, and he's one of those guys that I'll actually want to see in spring training next year, and sort of just a health update, not a results update on Carpenter going forward.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Carpenter moving forward?
Yeah, I read that he's hoping to be back in 3 weeks, which sounds very optimistic to me. I think four is the absolute minimum you're looking at here. And I think his teammate, Tommy Pham, had the same similar kind of injury and was out six earlier this season. So that's a pretty significant proportion of the rest of the year. The other thing that surprised me when I was checking where he was in the player rater is that he's 94, which I don't really understand how he's been basically the second best hitter in the league behind David Ortiz and is 94th. But I guess this is just a fact of how we measure production in fantasy. That the things that he's been doing well, and you know, his ridiculously high OPS and on base percentage actually aren't that good in standard 5x5 leagues. They're not helping you that much because he hasn't got the runs and RBI to go with it. So with those two things combined, I also wonder about how easy it'll be for him to turn on pitches. He's you know, really been crushing a lot of home runs in the half of the plate, like a lot of lefties do, and I wonder whether the oblique is going to make it a little bit more difficult for him to do that. So overall, yeah, it's pretty difficult for me to buy into Carpenter the rest of the way.
Eli, are you is down on Carpenter moving forward as these guys?
Man, screw the ESPN Player Rater if that's where they have him.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they have him as the 10th third baseman.
That's obviously the Player Rater
doesn't have an on-base
percentage. Yeah, it's the Player Rater is.
They don't. Well, they don't because ESPN standard leagues don't play with on-base percentage.
No, I know, but they also overrate the shit out of stolen bases in my mind. But who knows?
I don't think that's true. I know I hear that a lot, especially on this podcast, from multiple people, not just calling you out.
But
stolen bases are extremely valuable because of the.
I get that. But we're talking about a third baseman or second baseman, whatever. Hitting 300 on pace for over 100 runs, 26 homers, 98 RBIs. Like, how many people do that? Like, get out of here.
I mean, look at the guys above him. I mean, Josh Donaldson, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado, Jake Lamb. I mean,
Castellanos.
You know? I mean, Castellanos, I don't understand. I mean, his hot start is the reason why, you know? But, I mean, Castellanos hitting 300, 17 home runs, you know? So.
Yeah, that's the thing, that the 14 home runs actually don't help him that much because so many guys are in that, you know, 15.
The power is so up this year that, I mean, if you're not playing an OBP format, the best thing about Carpenter is the positional eligibility.
Well, whatever. If you're in a head-to-head league, I think you got to try to get him on the cheap to maybe the guy who owns him is battling for a playoff spot so you can get Carpenter on the cheap because this is a guy that – when it comes playoff time in your league, he's going to be one of the studs. So I think you got to go get him. I'm not all that worried about him, but in a head-to-head league, I think you got to really go try to get him.
I wasn't as worried about him as I am now after listening to Darius and Chuck talk about him. They actually pushed me to be more worried about him moving forward because I got an offer. And I mean, there were other parts in it, but I got an offer of Chris Davis and pieces for Matt Carpenter and some better pieces in a dynasty league. And I turned it down, mostly because I need average in that league. And Chris Davis's average would actually hurt me. I wasn't as afraid of the loss of production as maybe I should be. Maybe I'm underrating this injury a little bit. So it's something I'm definitely going to reevaluate, but I think once he comes back, he'll be fine. You know, the Cardinals are a team that again handles injuries well, but are competing for a playoff spot this year and a championship in their minds. And I think they will make sure that he's back healthy before before they activate him. There's no reason to rush him back.
Are we picking up Colton Wong for the next month to try to help us out, or no?
I think you should.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
I like Wong. Exactly. I mean, I know that he had a really rough start to the season, but he made some real adjustments to his swing and his approach in AAA in the brief send down, and I think they're starting to show through.
Yeah.
I for what it's worth, I believe in the dictum that says that if you never trade for or draft an injured player, again in the rest of your fantasy career, you will come out way ahead because, you know, because of setbacks and everything else. I mean, look at the Michael Brantley style situations that have happened this year. You know, even Young Ho Gong, who's now in all kinds of trouble on top of waiting for him to get back. I'm a firm believer in that. So I don't acquire people who are hurt, and I don't draft people who are hurt unless I absolutely have to.
I guess in the hitting regard, you can, you know, kind of do that. In pitching, you definitely can't, because everybody's been hurt or could be hurt at some point.
Yeah, but you don't need to draft for them or trade for them when they're hurt.
Does that mean you avoided Kershaw in last year's draft because he was going to miss the first week of the season?
I just avoid Kershaw because I don't generally draft pitching that early. And, you know, Kershaw is a beast, and he's obviously an outlier in multiple ways. But, you know, like I said, I don't see any reason. If there's a player who's semi-close that you could acquire who's not hurt, why wouldn't you take the guy who's healthy? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think that I'd have to do some research and kind of look into guys coming off of injuries and things like that, but I don't think it's as big of an issue as you're making it sound.
Have Chuck and Justin agreed on anything today?
No, we've agreed to disagree.
And it's all on like non like real player related issues. it's like we're not disagreeing on a particular player or particular skill set. We're disagreeing on just kind of just random thoughts. But that is going to wrap us up. Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Well, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do a fifth and a sixth round in the midseason redraft that I've written for the Friends with Fantasy Baseball podcast for the website itself, which I'd love to see a little bit more traffic on because there's some really good stuff on there. And then other than that, just getting ready for a baseball trip. I'm going to Comerica and PNC Park both for the first time this coming week. So I'm excited about that and looking forward for 2 weeks from now when I can talk to you guys again.
And Darius, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
So I'm on Twitter at DariusA64. I wrote up that piece I was talking about last time about what if we could only watch one inning. So that's over on Banish to the Pen right now. I sort of had some thoughts about what you might want to choose or avoid choosing. And I'm also going to be getting up something, you know, looking at what who can help you down the stretch of in August and September soon.
Eli, where can we reach? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Eli FWFB, and the return of the Tuesday DFS show coming next week, so tune in for that.
Nice. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, Friends of Fantasy Benefits at gmail.com. I don't have my old email address. You can read anything I'm writing for baseball on FanGraphs. Definitely go check out that article I wrote on the Cinema Stompers and the women they signed to play there. On thehardballtimes.com. And they're actually, if you're interested in that story at all, they're actually, I believe, they announced that they're signing a catcher, and a week from this Friday, they will be having the first all-female battery in the history of baseball. Or in the history of professional baseball. So definitely, that'll be a cool thing to watch. Unfortunately, I'll be on vacation. Like I said, next week, I won't be able to catch that. I'm hoping to get some video of the game, either simulcast or after the fact. So, and I'll definitely be kind of following up with them a little bit. For Friends of Fantasy Benefits right now, I am covering just football in terms of the written work. The football podcast will hopefully start once I get back, or maybe even while I'm gone, just waiting for iTunes to update our new feed for that. And we will be getting rolling on fantasy football coverage. Because I'm in the middle of a mock draft with some interesting rules. So I definitely want to kind of chat about that. Definitely follow me on Twitter because I'll be tweeting out who I'm taking there. I'm, I believe, 4 rounds in. So for Eli, Chuck, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening and have a fantastic baseball season.